Love it. Yeah, policy. I was thinking, you may suggest the appearance, since it's a doraisa, you want an heir beside a portion, you should give your own car, you should be initials in your parents' car.
Yes, sir.
You can come back, and this is what the chumras that I think you might want to think of adopting, as chumras go, it's one of the pleasant ones. I wanted to speak a few minutes about something in the sedras that we're dealing with, which is it's an insight in how a person and what a person needs to think about what a person wants to do right. And it's counterintuitive. Let's take a look a second. The Gemara says that when Yosef HaTzadik went into the house, he was bent on doing an Aveira. That was his intention. So what stopped him? So the Gemara says to Saita that Bois Hashor crossed the Duke of Shalavim and Venerzal Makaloi. He saw his father's image in the window. Amalai, his father's image, told him, Yosef, Asid Nachicha Shikosol Amalifo, your brothers are going to be written in on the motion. The Atra Benehem, with Saita Shimach Shimon Benehem, the Quran says, you're supposed to, your name is there, and you want to erase, and you'll be called by a rather unflattering title. So that's that. Let's pause and think a little bit about this Gemara and so on. You know, when a person is extremely bent on fulfilling some sort of urge or craving. So the only thing that would stop a person would be some sort of counter pain. A person knows there's something very good, but it's a 10-mile walk. So you can see yourself, well, no way I'll walk 10 miles for it. If a person reaches Gehenna and fire, burning, and pain, and so on, so it's sort of the mind evens out the two. But let's try to translate modern terms. Imagine somebody is hanging out where he shouldn't. And someone says, you know, if you keep hanging out here, you're not going to get a debris. They say, another good reason to hang out. I mean, why would that stop a person? We're talking about somebody in strength of his youth, turned on by a tremendous timer of somebody who is tremendously attractive. And we're telling him a whole story, a whole story, does this and that. Do you really think, would that be the thought process to stop us? That's really kind of strange. So let's think a little bit about this. We tend to think of situations, pleasant and unpleasant, as being absolute. So somebody who lives on, let's take some minimal amount, like 10 pounds a day, is worse off than somebody who lives on 50 pounds a day. And obviously, he can buy five of the main things. But let's go back to something in history that seems to belie that. In America and the world over, in 1929, there was a tremendous market crash. And people lost their fortunes in the stock market. And many people committed suicide. It was a very tragic era. It really, in many senses, it began the cycle that would bring on World War II eventually. But let's take a look at some of those people who had lost all their money. And they committed suicide. Now, many of those people had some money, something. Many of those people were not worse off than homeless people in the streets. You don't read about homeless people committing suicide because they have no money or their conditions are poor, anything like that. I mean, they unfortunately, you know, people died of the elements a while later. But if people commit suicide saying this is a terrible life, you don't get that. And yet, So here we have somebody who has no money, really no money. He's been living in the street for the last 10 years. And he's upset, he's bitter, he's angry, he's annoying, whatever he is. But suicide is not something on his mind. And here we have somebody who, A, probably has other assets. B, has skills that he can probably use and get some minor work. You know, something, you know, it could be some sort of unglorious clerk or something, but he can do it. And even now, he's not worse than a homeless person who's been living for 10 years. So why is it that those people committed suicide and those people didn't? Those people went on with life. Why? The answer is we're dealing with a very different dynamic. We're not dealing, it's not true that our sense of things is built on absolute scale. Our sense of self is the most important element in this process. In other words, what's most precious to a person is his sense of self, who he is. And if that takes a hard blow, then a person feels dead. Because down deep, who I am and how, what my place is, what my role is, even the Kedushas is true. Chomi Amago, you know, everybody knows the story where he fell asleep for 7 years, he woke up, and he walked into the Beis Medrash, and no one gave him time of the day. And he heard people speaking with yearning about how Chomi Amago is such a wonderful kufa, and no one looked at him. And he asked to be taken from the world, because I don't have a place anymore. Chomi Amago is not needed now. They talk about him with tremendous yearning, but Chomi Amago has no place. So a person's most important sense is sense of self. And depending on how the person made it, if that takes a blow, the person is dead. I knew somebody, unfortunately, very, very difficult story, with somebody, and a wonderful person, who was known for his honesty and integrity and so on. He was some head of a bank in Israel, and many years ago, the banks collapsed under his stewardship, and he was one of the people at fault. He unfortunately served time in jail, and he came out, and I ran into him a few times. He was provided for. People really felt a lot of respect, because he was a very good person. He's a very good person. But the person himself walked around hollow, because there was no sense. His self was respected, integrity, and so on, trust. And he knew that he didn't have that anymore. And he was basically on the big shelf. I couldn't bear the door for him. It was tragic. So the sense of who we are is the out. Let's reread the Gemara again. Let's reread the Gemara and see. When you read the Gemara carefully, it's a lot. The way I read it, kind of, the way I insinuated was that we were holding a prize up, and we were saying, you know, Yosef, would you like to have a plaque with Beis Hamikdash, Yosef HaTzadik? Would you like to have it? Well, this is what you got to do. So what it says? It says, you are one of the people that is written on it. Anta b'neihem. Ritzoncha sheyemach eshimcha. Do you want that erase? This is who you are. Do you want that erase? Do I want to become somebody big? Okay, you know, if it doesn't cost money. Do you want to be toppled? Yes, that's something that goes to the core of who you are. A lot of educational studies have shown that, and it's something you see in school all the time, when somebody is successful in school, he will do a lot to hold on to it. The person who's number one in a class setting, or from the top, whatever it is, will tend to push much harder to stay there rather than the person who will struggle to get there. And it's not because it's harder or easier. It's because the person who's not there is happy with who he is. I am the bottom of the class. I firmly hold up the best of the bottom. Okay, you want to get to the top? Well, how long of a climb is it? It's a mile up. You know what? I'll pass on that one. But when a person's on top and he's holding off with their life and it's a struggle, but I say, look down. You want to fall down to there? You hold on very, very hard to stay there. We had neighbors in Azabir where I lived. They came from Iran. They were wealthy people. They came, they were there before the Shah was toppled, and they had bought a very fancy penthouse, two penthouse apartments in Tivoli and lived in. And when the Shah was toppled, the Khomeini came to power, they escaped by the skin of their teeth. They and the whole family. And they were fortunate to have a penthouse, but they didn't have more than that. They have no money, they have no assets. And they go to a small store somewhere in the city, and they lived on the small store, simply, humbly. A few years later, they made their way back into Iran to go back. And someone asked them, what are you doing? And they said, we can't live like this. It's not that we're very material people. It's not as if they needed really whatever it is that they had. They were wealthy people, I understood. But they were living as lower middle class, where they were used to being, you know, wealthy. And the idea of not being the person you are is what rejected them. We find a similar thing in halacha. Somebody, it says, who eats in the marketplace is it the worst sin? I mean, we can work out the Elder's brother's body washed over here, and Michael Bench there. We can work out the brothers to work. So it's not polite, it's not nice, it's whatever it is, but it's American. But so what? Well, why was that making possible things? So Rashi says, and all this master, he speaks about it. What keeps a person honest is not because honesty is great and fantastic. It's because I don't want to lose the respect of people. Somebody, you know, people say, you know, like you spoke about jail, that it's a hotel, and you get it. Yes, if that's where you spend most of your life, then fine. But when you are an honored, respected member of society, and you now are treated like the scum of society, that's a blow that goes to the heart of who you are. Somebody once wrote, a prosecutor once was writing memoirs, and he wrote that for a white-collar criminal, the punishment is when he's sitting at trial. And his whole person, the whole image of self that he built up to others and himself, is torn to shreds. He says, usually by the time the trial is over, they've had the punishment because they've been shredded and every last bit of dignity is gone. So what keeps a person honest is his sense of dignity. And if a person has no sense of dignity, if I can show you up to be a liar in public and couldn't kill us. You know, it doesn't make sense. So I lied, so what? Then what's going to keep you honest? Threats are not great. So a person who's lacking self-dignity and he can walk in the street and eat, then you know what? He has very little incentive to be honest. So I'm a liar, so I'm a liar, so what? What will keep everybody honest is a sense of self, because people consider me that. You're learning, I say, a mafia, the lingua vitsia. So there's a halacha which is sort of, it's typical of a similar type of halacha in a few places. And it goes like this. It's actually, it's halacha itself, it's an ashawa, and later on. There's also, the Torah gives different obligations for different types of shomrim, commensurate with the level of what we accept, shom achinam, shol, shom asachar. The Mishnah says that a person can ramp up his obligations. So if somebody says to me, well, you hold this object for free, but be as responsible as if you would be a shomasach or a shoah. So the Gemara says, Mishnah said, you can do it. The Gemara asks, well, how? Where's the kinyan? We can't, there is no, if I go up to somebody and say, I'll give you $1,000, it's worthless. It doesn't obligate you, really. Not financially. It might obligate you as a nether, but not financially. So what's the Gemara asks, well, where's the kinyan? So the Gemara has one paragraph, there is a kinyan. A second paragraph of Gemara says, and it's typical in a few places, Bahi Hanog, the Kohenzi, or the Kurd, or the Kurd Inshi Gehenni, the fact that people look at me as respectable, the fact that I enjoy it when people say, you are a responsible person, you're somebody who's trustworthy. The Gemara says it for many things, for an apotropis. There are many, many obligations we undertake, and it's so important to us that even if we don't make a kinyan, we become obligated. Normally, when I say I'll do something, we don't feel the person really means it intensely enough, and therefore it doesn't obligate. But when it comes to something that gives me the aura of respect that I want and deserve, that makes it who I am. Our big struggle is how to motivate ourselves to do what's right. And that really was the core of every movement in Yiddishkeit that tried to bring us to do good. What's good? We pretty much have a good idea of what's good. Halacha gives us specific categories, but how do we get ourselves to do it? So when the Muslim movement arose, there were different directions. The easiest one to understand was Navarra, which sort of preached a person ripping himself to shreds. A person being brutally honest with himself, understanding that he's nothing, nobody, garbage, and fooling himself, and so on and so forth. It was a very brutal, demanding regime, which meant to bring a person to perfection by ripping to shreds our full self-image that we built up. Everybody built up a comfortable self-image, and that the virus went to rip that to shreds, and for many people was effective in many ways, and so on. At the other end of the spectrum was Slobodka. Slobodka, my father himself worked there, grandfather was the Alta Slobodka, and they preached something that was called Godless Order, which people sort of only saw the outside of it. They would dress well, they would act with tremendous dignity, and you know, there was a lot of emphasis that that they'd be extremely, you know, their carriage, everything about themselves was full of dignity, shivas. When they gave aliyahs on Shabbos, and they still do it in Chavon Yeshiva, which is sort of the continuation to some degree, they would stand by the bima 10 minutes after they put the Sefer Torah down and look around the yeshiva, the Gahoyim and the Mashkiach, and they would talk in hushed whispers about who deserves to get an aliyah. The point of it was to make a big deal out of it. You're being called up to the Torah. It's a mini Maamar Sinai, and this is the yeshiva. Who is worthy? It's something very, very important. That was their whole thing, and the Alta spoke about the theme. His constant was Godless Order. And many people sort of poke fun at it, you know. It seems on the surface of it, it seems as Navarre is a much more difficult approach, but it seems to open a harder issue. And whereas Slavatka seems to sort of polish it on the outside. But the answer is no. The idea of a person recognizing its self-worth in many ways keeps him straight more than anything else. If a person were to, you know, we always are asked to make a chesed nefesh, who we are, and we always understand chesed nefesh to be what we're not, or what we're bad. But there's another chesed nefesh. We're Klal Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this is my people, and this is who I'm proud of. We're sitting and learning. We are the ones that if we learn through a sukkah and we come out the halakhas this way or that way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu agrees with us. We're people that follow a personal discipline and regimen that very, very few people our age follow. I mean, how many people your age do the things you do and don't do the things you don't do? When a person understands that Lachasha, even if within the context of my class or school, I'm not from the top, whatever, but in terms of who I am as a person, if a person would understand his own value, then things would be different in terms of, I would be able to say, you know what, it's a step down for me, it's two steps down for me. I really, really can't do it. And I would lose my interest. People keep rank. Nobody, if somebody asked you to go somewhere with people that you consider really inferior to yourself, with like people you consider too my grade is lower than you, in everything, you would say that's just the dregs of society, it's not me. I wouldn't have the time because I couldn't bring myself down because my self-image is most important. It's not covered where I'm looking for false chashivas, or I'm looking for chashivas where, you know, like somebody introduced you as a speaker type of chashivas. That's shallow. But if you're chashivas, I am. I'm a person who does A, B, and C and does not do X, Y, and Z. It's surprising. It's kind of counterintuitive that would be a way. But in the end of it, you know, look around in a classroom, the people on top work much harder than the people on the bottom. So yes, some of it has to do with the cause and effect is you got there because you worked harder, but it also becomes a self-fulfilling cycle. If you're on the top of the class, you'll hold on for dear life, not to fall to the bottom, because falling is a very devastating experience. To struggle to get up. So if a person would get up in the morning, and he would say, he would understand what he says. I finished with a story that I once heard that moved me tremendously. And it goes to the heart of the point in a very fundamental way. I was at a chasna of somebody in yeshiva, somebody together, last minute, my father was there. He's not here anymore. And his father-in-law had been a survivor who was not alive anymore at the chasna. And Rabbi Yaakov Naiman, Rosh Yeshiva Ar Yisrael, got up to speak. And he said, my dear chasna, you never knew your father-in-law. Let me introduce your father-in-law to you. I believe his name was Yaakov Lovitz, by the way, I'm pretty sure I remember his name. He said, he was during the war stuck in the forest as fighting for the Germans. And he wasn't a concentration camp, but it was in many ways worse. He lived in a pit. In that pit was where was the bathroom, the living room, the bedroom, and lice and rats and everything. Literally a pit. Many days he didn't have what to eat. And there was no heating. The heating system broke down in the pit. There was nothing there. And if the Germans caught him, or the Polish caught him, he'd be shot. And he got up one morning and he said, I'm living in a pit, in a sewer. I am infested with vermin. My life is worth nothing. Whoever finds me shoots me. And I haven't eaten in days. President Roosevelt is in a warm bed, well fed, with everything, all goods in the world at his command. If you were to offer me to switch, I wouldn't do it. Baruch Ato Hashem Elokein and Al Ha'olam Shaloi Asani Goy. And that's a type of awareness. If we ask ourselves honestly, And let's take a look. Our life is tough. It demands a lot from us. But what life about? What is Hashivas? How many of you guys can get up early and go to sleep late and work at full curriculums and do and not do a lot of things that teenagers want to do? And strive at things, thinking about, am I doing right? Am I doing good? Was I good enough? And yes, it's a struggle. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't win. But if you understand that, if a person were to make Shalei Asani Goy with that type of kapara, then yes, hard is hard, but this is who I am. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took my neshama and said, this is a neshama of Chai Yisrael. It's of a different cut. It's capable of doing things that are way beyond what the world's capable of doing, and therefore he's going to be elite. If we think of ourselves as elite, then a lot of things that attract us, the attraction will wane, will become much weaker. We'll have a different self-image to hold ourselves to what's good. And Bez Hashem, we should be zochen to make that bracha with the kavana and say Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu V'Noyim Garaleinu Mayokas Vaseinu. And if we appreciate the treasure we have and value ourselves for what we become, no matter what's still left to do, but you're quite high up the mountain. Even if there are miles to go, you're a mile up. You're at the top of a certain mountain. Even if the mountain goes much further, if we appreciate it, if we understand it's not that you want your name to be inscribed on the equation. Your name is there. What you can do, Chas V'Shalom, is erase it. But you're there. That's your place. That's where there's a reserved spot for you with your name on it. We would have many ways, and it would be a tremendous siddur to do what's right, to get there, and to be the people not only can become, but the people we really are. That's all.